was a light and cry. Johnny, I hardly knew ya.
Hello, you are listening to Unsound Methods here on Yurt Radio at Hampshire College. My name is Damon Blanchett. Each week on this show, I talk science, skepticism, and play some music along a sort of theme. This week's musical theme is Celtic rock. That song at the top was Dropkick Murphy's take on Johnny, I Hardly Knew Ya, an old classic done by many, many many bands since the year 1867 is when that one was written. Also one of my favorite songs. I must say, I think their version is the best. If you'd like to reach me in pretty much real time, you can do that by sending me a tweet at Damon Blanchett, or slightly slower at my email address, damonbla@gmail.com. That's D-A-M-O-N-B-L-A. @gmail.com. My first story this week is close to my heart, or should I say my brain. It's great to get some real computer science news on the show, since that's my specialty, and I don't think I've talked computer science much at all since doing this. The Titan supercomputer, as of now the fastest and most powerful computer in the world, was unveiled just days ago at the Oak Ridge National Laboratory in Tennessee. It was built to help scientists crunch numbers for solving some of the world's biggest questions and problems in six different areas: climate change, astrophysics, biofuels, combustion, materials science, and nuclear energy systems. According to Oak Ridge's official statement, it is, and I quote, "the world's most powerful supercomputer for open science with a theoretical peak performance exceeding 20 petaflops." End quote. Now, 20 petaflops sounds really funny, but what it means is that it can do 20 quadrillion calculations per second. That's a 20 with, is that 12, either 12 or 15 zeros after it? Maybe 15 zeros. It's huge anyway. To put that into perspective, it is like if the entire population of the Earth, that is 7 billion people, all were to solve 3 million math problems each per second. I'd like to find one person who can solve 3 million math problems in 1 second. Another interesting way to look at the insane speed of this thing is to imagine 1,000 really smart people performing a mathematical computation every second for 60,000 years. So that is, if 1,000 people sat down and did one math calculation every second for 60,000 years, that would be what this computer can do in 1 second. NPR said that this supercomputer is faster than 500,000 laptops all working at the same time. It's also got 700 terabytes of memory, which is unbelievably huge. That's 700,000 gigabytes of memory. The laptop here that I'm actually using to help with my show here has, what does it have? 8 gigabytes of memory on it. This Titan one has 700,000 gigabytes. It was not cheap, of course. The reported cost of Titan was $100 million, and the electric bill alone will cost about $9 million per year. That's just for the electricity. Now, not only is it the fastest computer now currently operating, but it's also one of the largest in terms of just physical size. Titan is about the size of a basketball court, and it's made up of 200 refrigerator-sized cabinets. And you can actually see pictures of this if you go online. I found this stuff at, I think it was Scientific American, but if you search for Titan supercomputer, you'll be able to see some pictures. It does look, it's really kind of cool looking. They got some nice art on the side of all the boxes that kind of mix together. It uses about the same electricity as an entire small town. I come from a small town called Blandford, and I would bet that this computer probably uses more electricity than the entire town. Let's see. It is still, however, the most, it's still, even considering that, it's still the most energy-efficient supercomputer yet created, meaning it probably could have taken the power of an entire city if it was built in the past, even probably 10 or 15 years ago, if they tried to build the exact same thing, it would probably take about the electricity of a city instead of a town. Still a lot, though. It is so energy efficient because of much of the processing is done on graphics cards, on GPUs, which are graphics processing units, as opposed to CPUs. It's the first computer, the first supercomputer of this magnitude to use GPUs in addition to CPUs, which are central processing units. That's where most of the processing on your computer is done, is on the CPU. GPUs are mostly just for graphics, but you can also use them for other things, which is what they're doing. GPUs power the graphics that are used in basically all video games these days. Even on an iPad or on your phone, if you play games on your phone, most likely the processing is done by a GPU, just the same as it is on a laptop. Or desktop computer. Let's see. So that means the gamers out there can actually have a claim to the technology used in Titan. Without the massive gaming market currently out there today, GPUs would not be as good as they are now and probably wouldn't have been used in Titan. The other thing with this is maybe you have a laptop and actually putting it on your lap, if you use it for any amount of time, you can feel the amount of heat that is coming out of that, out of the bottom of it. It's hard to, sometimes it's hard to keep the thing right on your lap. So Titan produces a huge amount of heat. So just a couple of fans like in your laptop or desktop computer would do absolutely nothing. It'd be a drop in the ocean to cool this thing. What they have to use is 24-inch, that's 2-foot diameter pipes that run 24-degree water continuously through the system. So there's these massive pipes going through all of the refrigerator-sized boxes with continuously running water. Below freezing water, actually. They must do something to keep it from freezing since it's below freezing. It's either under pressure or salt water or something along those lines. It's probably under pressure, actually. That would reduce the freezing point. And that's just to get rid of the heat. The other thing is that Titan is incredibly loud. The sound of the fans and the water pipes to cool the 40,000 processors in this machine is huge. Operators who are in the room that contains Titan for any more than 15 minutes actually have to wear earplugs. Titan will be used only for scientific study, so no hacking or anything of that sort is allowed. For sure. Jeremy Smith, the director of the Center for Molecular Biophysics at Oak Ridge National Laboratory, which I said is where Titan resides right now, in Tennessee, said, and I quote, "We want to kill all known diseases, solve the world's energy problems, and understand the functioning of the living cell." So that's really a question of really high throughput brute force number crunching. End quote. So this thing is incredible. It is said to be the fastest supercomputer in the entire world. It's got a few things to go against it. One of them is IBM's Big Blue. And I believe IBM's machine that was on the Jeopardy show a while ago, I think that was last winter, that computer is also incredibly fast. But they believe Titan is the fastest one so far, and we'll know for sure in, I believe, a couple of weeks when the Top 500 list comes out. Top 500 is a list done by computer scientists, at least I think it's computer scientists, of the fastest 500 computers in the entire world, and it's looking like Titan is going to be on top. Pretty amazing. Another really cool computer is in Japan. It's called the Earth Simulator. Very cool computer. I believe it is also, it's in probably the top five of fastest in the world. It's just cool that there's a computer called the Earth Simulator. So, next up, I'm going to play another song along the Celtic rock variety. This is Flogging Molly. I'm going to play their my favorite song of theirs, which is called Black Friday Rule.
To believe in myself once again, so I dream of a man whose hopes never end. To kiss with a girl who's as lovely as you, I'd give you my heart if you gave me the truth. And for every tear that is lost from an eye, I'd dig me a well where no man could destroy. I want to believe in a freedom that's bold, but all I remember is the freedom of old. Coffee.
The buildings, they shake, but my heart, it beats still. Oh, mother of Jesus, I feel pretty ill. I want to go home where my people feel safe. But there ain't no jobs in the old free state. So I must remain.
That was Flogging Molly and their song Black Friday Rule. Definitely no relation to Black Friday, as in the day after Thanksgiving here in America. A day in which I will stay as far away from all stores as possible. But I do think it does relate to another thing called Black Friday that happened in Ireland. And I tried looking it up. I could not figure it out. I know it's something like that. But anyway, if you can, that was Flogging Molly. If you can find anything by them that's live, and I would love to see them in concert, I highly recommend it. They have some amazing shows. All right, moving on. A couple of weeks ago, I reported on a story about a beluga whale that could imitate human sounds. Well, it appears there have been even more reports of animals speaking in human tones. This time it's an elephant, and his name is Koshik. He is specifically an Asian elephant, and he makes the sounds in an interesting way. He sticks his trunk into his mouth, changing the shape of where the sound comes out and making it sound more human-like. According to the report published by researchers in the journal Current Biology, Koshik can speak exactly 5 words. Understandable to anyone who knows the Korean language. So he doesn't know English, but he knows a little bit of Korean. The words are Annyeong, which means hello, Anja, which means sit down, Ania, which means no, Nuo, which means lie down, and Choa, which means good. And I hope I didn't butcher the Korean there, since I don't know any Korean whatsoever. That's how they were spelled out anyway. The researchers have said that Koshik's language skills may provide important insights into the biology and evolution of complex vocal learning, an ability that is critical for human speech and music. Angela Stoger of the University of Vienna said, and I quote, "Human speech basically has two important aspects, pitch and timbre. Intriguingly, the elephant Koshik is capable of matching both pitch and timbre patterns. He accurately imitates human formants as well as the voice pitch of his trainers." This is remarkable considering the huge size, the long vocal tract, and other anatomical differences between an elephant and a human. End quote. This is right along the lines of the beluga whale. This animal is creating the sounds even without human-like vocal muscles and shapes. The differences in an elephant's vocal cords and this one's ability to create human sounds are amazing. According to Stoger, for one thing, elephants have a trunk instead of lips. Pretty obvious. While their large larynx can produce very low-pitched sounds, Koshik's speech exactly copies the pitch and other characteristics of his human trainer's voices. I'm not sure if you've heard it before, but I've seen some documentaries that talk about elephants, and they are definitely, like, low. It sounds like it's almost like a long burping kind of sound. Wah, like, real low. Like, I remember the researchers, they're out on the Serengeti there, or one of the plains in Africa, and they had to have this special machine just so they could record the incredibly low pitch of the elephants. I mean, they can, of course, make high sounds, too, but a lot of times it's really low, beyond human anyway. Structural analysis of Koshik's speech showed not just clear similarities to human voices, but also clear differences from the usual calls of elephants. It turns out both African and Asian elephants have been reported to mimic human sounds in the past, but they've never really been scientifically studied until now. I know the elephant sounds have been studied scientifically, but not in the case of making human sounds. Why did Koshik decide to start mimicking human speech? The scientists don't really know for sure. They don't think that he is actually trying to say a specific thing to the humans, at this point anyway. They do hypothesize that it goes back to when he was a young elephant. He was the only elephant in the Everland Zoo in South Korea for 5 years, basically by himself. Well, by himself in terms of he had no elephants around, other elephants around him. And this was during an important time for his development. So humans were his only social contacts for his young and developmental years. Stoger said, and I quote, "We suggest that Koshik started to adapt his vocalizations to his human companions to strengthen social affiliation, something that is also seen in other vocal learning species, and in a very special cases, also across species." Now, for your listening enjoyment, I do have a recording of Koshik talking. It's really short. It's like 3 seconds, and it's got a human. It's got a human first, and then it's got Koshik right after that, and I'll play it a few times. Hopefully it will work. I have it plugged into my laptop here. I gotta turn it up. All right, I'm gonna try to play it a few times, and we'll see how this sounds. I should be able to hear it too. No, I gotta turn it up here. I gotta turn up my laptop. Here we go. I'll do it a couple more times. See if you can tell the difference between first it's the human and then it's the elephant.
안녕.
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 That's him saying 안녕. 안녕. He kind of shortened the first part, but you could still kind of hear it. Pretty neat. He sounded a lot like the original guy. That's him saying, so that was him saying again, "Annyeong," which means hello in Korean. Pretty awesome. I love stuff like that. Parrots aren't the only animals that can learn to speak human. All right. How about another song? This time I'm playing a song by the Pogues. Yeah, I couldn't miss the Pogues when doing a Celtic rock music theme, that's for sure. Here is their version of another old classic done by many bands. This song, not as long though. This song only goes back to 1966, it looks like. Done by many bands. This song is called The Irish Rover. Many of you have probably heard this before.
On the 4th of July, 1806, we set sail from the sweet cove of Cork. We were sailing away with a cargo of bricks for the Grand City Hall in New York. 'Twas a wonderful craft, she was rigged for a laugh. You know how the wild wind drove her. She stood several blasts, she had 27 masts, and they called her the Irish Rover.
We had 1 million bags of the best loyal rags. We had 2 million barrels of stone. We had 3 million sides of our blind horses' hides. We had 4 million barrels of bones. We had 5 million hogs, 6 million doves, 7 million barrels of porter. We had 8 million piles of old Nanny Goss tiles and a hold of the Irish Rover.
There was old Mickey Coote, who played hard on his flute when the ladies lined up for a set. He was too skill for each sparkling quadrille, till the dancers were fluter and bet. With his smart, witty talk, he was cock of the walk, as he rolled the dames under and over. They all knew at a glance, when he took up his stance, and he sailed in the aisle.
That was the Pogues doing their version of the classic song, The Irish Rover. Another song done by a lot of artists, including, I might add, Dropkick Murphys, the first band I played this evening. Now, do you have a dog that chases its tail? Well, according to research published in the journal PLOS1, your dog may have obsessive compulsive disorder. It also might depend on what type of dog you have. The research was conducted on standard and miniature bull terriers, Staffordshire bull terriers, and German shepherds. Hans Lohi, a professor of canine genomics at the University of Helsinki and co-author of the study, said, and I quote, "Some of these compulsions are more common in certain breeds, which suggests a genetic factor. There might also be a there might be a shared biology behind the development of the disease," end quote. And also, the research may shed light on human forms of obsessive-compulsive disorder. To learn more about the disorder, Lohi and his colleagues distributed a detailed questionnaire to 368 dog owners in Finland, 150 of which showed no signs of compulsion and served as controls. The researchers also took blood samples from 181 of the canine subjects. Researchers said several characteristics of canine compulsive disorder were similar to those of human OCD. Like humans, dogs with compulsive disorders usually begin their repetitive behaviors before they reached sexual maturity. Some dogs suffered only a few episodes during their lifetime, whereas others engaged in the behavior for lengthy periods throughout the day. Littermates often had the same behavioral disposition. So if one puppy in a litter has some kind of obsessive disorder, then it's more likely that other ones also in the same litter do. That kind of lends credence to the genetic idea. According to the article from Scientific American, where I found this story, not everyone agrees with this finding, however. Perminder Sachdev, director of the Neuropsychiatric Institute at Prince of Wales Hospital in Randwick, Australia, notes that humans, unlike animals, usually recognize these distressing behaviors and attempt to control them. Tail chasing, he argues, is more akin to stereotyped and repetitive behavior, which is often seen in people with autism, as opposed to something like obsessive compulsive disorder. Quote from Sachdev, "I think that it is difficult to argue that tail chasing is a true model of OCD," he says. End quote. Lohi, however, plans to check further into dog-human connections in future studies. This is just yet another example of humans and animals. Well, I mean, humans are animals, of course, but just the fact that we're all coming from the same place, we can get similar diseases, we can have the same sort of problems and the same sort of good things as well. It's very interesting. All right, I am going to play a couple more songs now. They're very short songs, but they're very good. These are by The Real Mackenzies. These guys are out of Canada, but they are quite Scottish, often wearing kilts during concerts and usually featuring a bagpipe in their songs. Almost every one of their songs has a bagpipe. Here are a couple of my favorites of theirs, "Cross the Ocean" and "Poor Decisions."
Press gang are looking after me. I'll awaken sometime on the morrow, and by then we'll be a legal way to see. Full sails bouncing on the Friday. I swear about the swear and windy here today. Telling by the swells and adventures in the making. That's if we don't dive on the way. Well, I'm the boy, the trusty boy that took me out to sea. The captain is a tyrant and he tells me what to do. But the first mate is a cutthroat with a mutineering spark. He plans to take the captain and feed him to the sharks. Press gang in the trenches in the morning. What the Navy did to me impressed me on the sea. I'm still alive and I've survived so many years later. As big a buccaneer as I could claim to be. Full sail bounding on the Friday. Jolly Rogers flapping with a score of 84s. Many pretty treasures, lots of booty to be taken. Cannon and the cutlass on a rebel man of war. Well, I was aboard the trenches in
pushed me out to sea, and now I am the captain, and I tell you what to do. My first mate is a cutthroat, a Tarzan going to skew. He pants his skin and get the king and beat him to the crew.
We are sailing from our homeland, cross the ocean, on the sea, for whatever reasons be. We question all authority.
Full sail, bouncing on the briny, Jolly Rogers flapping with the score of 84. Many pretty treasures, lots of booty to be taken. The cannon and the cutlass on a rebel man of war.
We are sailing from our homeland, cross the ocean, on the sea. For whatever reasons be, we question all authority. We are sailing.
That was two songs courtesy of the Celtic rock band, the Real Mackenzies. One of my favorites when it comes to that kind of music. I think those guys are awesome. That was Cross the Ocean and Poor Decisions. All right, astronomy. There is a new theory as to why the two sides of the moon look so different from each other, and it's actually kind of cool. In a recently published study in the journal Nature, astronomers have put forth the idea that the Earth actually had two moons early in its history. The theory goes that in addition to the big moon we have right now, there was a tiny second one, orbiting at the same time. And at some point, the smaller one slammed into the larger one and was never seen again. The researchers ran computer simulations and actually have some details of what the second moon was like. It would have been about 750 miles wide, which is a third the size of the moon we have up there right now. And it would have been formed at the same time and in the same collision that created the single moon we have today. Real quick background. One theory for the, probably the leading theory for the formation of the moon is that an object the size of Mars slammed into the Earth early in the solar system's history, smashing a huge amount of debris into orbit, which then formed into the moon. The problem that these astronomers are trying to solve is why the far side of the moon looks so different from the side we can see here on Earth. Another thing, due to tidal locking, maybe you know this, but which has to do with the gravity of the moon and the Earth, the rotation of the moon is just right so that we always only see one side of the moon. Another thing is that the far side of the moon is sometimes called the dark side, but it's really not. It actually has day and night cycles just like the rest of the moon and the Earth. There's no such thing as the quote dark side of the moon. The differences between the two sides are actually fairly large. For instance, the near side, which is facing us, is mostly low and flat, but the far side is much more high and mountainous. It's actually an average of a little more than a mile higher up, almost as if it's like up on a big plateau. Another difference is that the near side is covered over much of its surface by large plains of volcanic rock, but on the far side there is very little volcanic rock. A co-author in the study, Eric Asfog, a planetary scientist at the University of California, Santa Cruz, said, and I quote, "It is entirely plausible for a Trojan moon to have formed in the giant impact and for it to go unstable after 10 million to 100 million years and leave its imprint on the moon. Imagine a ball of Gruyere colliding into a ball of cheddar," end quote. So we could have had a second moon for 10 to 100 million years worth of the Earth's early history. Pretty amazing. You would have looked up into the sky and seen two moons. Would have been pretty cool. What's left of the second moon would make up the highlands now seen on the moon's far side. The impact would also have squished an underground ocean of magma toward the near side, explaining why phosphorus, rare earth metals, and radioactive potassium, uranium, and thorium are concentrated in the crust there. That would be on the near side. Good way to test all this stuff is to actually have a satellite or a probe land on the far side of the moon and take some samples, sample it, a lot like Curiosity is doing on the moon right now. Not on the moon, on Mars right now. If we could do the same thing on the moon, land a rover, have it drive around a little bit, pick up some pieces of dirt, some shovels of dirt, and analyze it, you could probably find out if there was a second moon that crashed into the big one that we have now. Be pretty neat. Another theory for the differences between the two sides of the moon is that it was caused by gravitational forces from the Earth. But according to the article I saw, this theory only explains about 25% of the differences in the two sides. Which theory is correct? Right now, nobody knows, but future research will hopefully shed more light on this mystery. So I'll say it again, if there's anyone from the government listening, give more money to NASA. This is awesome stuff. It'd be really cool to find out that we actually had two moons, even if it was way in the past. That's just neat stuff. All right. I have a little bit of time left, but I got one more song. I thank you for listening to Unsound Methods here on Yurt Radio. My name is Damon Blanchett. You can reach me on Twitter at Damon Blanchett, all one word. or I'm on Facebook, or you can send an email to damonblah@gmail.com. I'm going to end it this week with a song by Enter the Haggis. I love these guys, and I may even have enough time for another song. I'll see what I can do. I may put another song after this one. These guys make awesome music, and they played in Northampton last year, I remember. Didn't get to see the show, but kind of wish I did now. Here's their song, Gasoline. Enjoy and have a great week. And I'm hoping I can actually get home today because I live an hour away from here in the hills. And from all reports, it's snowing and the snowplows are now out in the town where I live. Of course, I'm looking out the window of the yurt here and it's not even snowing here. We haven't had anything, so I can't really say what's going on. For now, though, here is Enter the Haggis and their song Gasoline.
All right, thanks a lot, everybody, for coming out and being a part of our live album. We're going to leave you with one last song, and it's called Gasoline.
Outsider on the side, former super born. I'm an outsider on the side, formerly a farm boy. Inside, I'm on the side, I'm divided, undecided. Back there on again, second time to charm, boy. Polish on the detail. I'll try to stay inside, eyes and ears and curtains closing. They lie on the sands, casualties of retail. Back then the earth was green, germ was back and the air was clean. And then I'm on the scene, causing trucks and gasoline. Inside I'm petrified, I don't wanna hide it anymore.
What's your
which way I lean? I ain't listening. What does it mean? Is it causing trust me?
Yes, me! Hey!
Outsider on the side, former sugar forward. I'm an outsider on the side, formerly a farm boy. Inside I'm on the side, I'm defining. Second time to charm, boy. Back then the air was green, Joe was back and the air was clean. And then up on the scene, causing trucks and gasoline. Inside I'm petrified, I don't wanna hide it anymore. Is it causing trucks need gasoline? Back then the earth was green, the tin was black and the water was clean. And then a farm was seen, causing trucks need gasoline. Inside I'm petrified, I don't wanna take it anymore.
We'll be right back.
I'm still here. I'm gonna say real quick, that song was actually, I looked it up, it was a live version of their song Gasoline, of course, and it was actually recorded right at the Iron Horse in Northampton in March a few years ago. So that was actually recorded locally. Not a local band, but that's pretty neat. They have an entire live album. It's actually called Northampton is the name of the album. And so that what you just heard was played at the Iron Horse. All right, I got one more song. This is from a new band, actually. I've just recently started listening to, called Santa Mamba. Has nothing to do with Celtic rock, but it is a great song. There you go. Have a great week.
El beso en la tierra, en la tierra que divina que te sigue todos los pasos, son los pasos que vienen de la selva, selva del indio que muere entre mis brazos. La danza del muerto es fuego en la pasión. Se sueña en ala de libertad. Here we go. La 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 la
cómo no. Sí, señor, cómo no. Sí, señor, cómo no. Sí, señor, cómo no.